My name is Dan Williams. I'm from IBM Research. So I'm from IBM Research. If any of you know me or met me in the hallways and chatted with me, I probably talked at length and with considerable enthusiasm about unikernels, which this work is not related to. So don't try to find a connection. Although if you do, maybe that would be interesting. In fact, this is the work from an intern that was at IBM named Xiaowen Zhu, and as Peter said, he was unable to come and present due to some visa issues. So I'll do my best to channel him and present it in a way that he would appreciate. So I don't think it's really necessary to motivate the importance of graph processing, but what we're looking at in this paper is processing multiple versions of the same graph. So the basic idea is that if you have a graph that evolves over time, so maybe, and this is the graph structure, so maybe like new edges come in, new vertices come in, things like this, you may want to understand some of the dynamics of this graph evolution. So this requires processing, running some analytics or whatever, some kind of processing on multiple versions of this. So for example, you could think of something like you have a social network that's evolving over time. You want to see how the distance between different users is varying. And so to think about this a little bit, to think about what the switching between versions is in a little bit more detail, we have kind of two different characteristics that we've identified. So the first one is that when you switch versions, so when you go from one of the graph versions to the next one and you want to run the computation on both, that version switch may not necessarily be forward only. It may not be that the version is chronological in time. It may not be that the version switch is towards a graph that is always bigger or something like that. So think of, again, in the social network example, if you wanted to find out where some event happened that changed the relationship between two users, you may imagine doing something like a binary search and flipping between graph versions that are not kind of right next to each other in the history. Also, you may have some collaborative data analytics type environment where you have multiple users who want to run different queries on different versions of the graph, so they may not be forward only. The second characteristic of this version switching that I want to point out is that we believe that for the most part that the switching between versions will be what we call local, which means that the next version will be similar to the current version. And really what I mean by that sense is that if you think about a very large graph, the versions that you may be comparing, a big subgraph of that may stay the same, while there might be some little region which is changing, and that might be the one that you're actually interested in and the reason that you're doing these computations. So these two characteristics, arbitrary and local, are some of the assumptions that we're making about about this version switching, this multi-version graph processing environment. So thinking about that type of environment, and applying kind of a current graph processing system that's designed for a single version is going to be inefficient. And so you can imagine that type of graph might, or using that type of system may look like something like this in this flowchart here, where you're loading the graph from into memory so you can compute on it. You run your computation, and then you pretty much have to throw that away so you can load a new version of the graph. And you're kind of ignoring the multi-version property that these are actually the same graph. They have a lot of things in common. So the obvious thing to do is that if you can capture what the differences are between these versions and simply integrate these deltas, then you'll have a faster loop in there, where even if you cache some of these deltas, which are what we're calling the differences, you are now starting to compute and then fetch a delta and integrate that into the graph so you can run another computation, et cetera. So the challenge here when trying to implement this type of thing or think about what a system would look like with this type of approach where you're reusing some of this version data, the graph version that's already sitting there, the challenge starts to be how should the graph be represented? And how should the deltas be represented? And really there's a three-way trade-off that we've identified here. So the existing single version graph processing systems, they're very good at processing things fast, and they also look at trying to keep things compact. So they have these kind of two goals that they're able to achieve. The thing that we're adding to this picture is the ability to switch, and this is another factor that isn't necessarily considered if you're not thinking about the multi-version scenario. So the system that we describe is called Version Traveler, and essentially it's made up of a hybrid graph representation, which tries to balance that trade-off, and also a hybrid delta representation that similarly balances that trade-off. So, the ability to get things that are both compact, have good access efficiency for the neighborhoods, and also are able to be switched is the thing that we go for. So Sharon implemented this in PowerGraph, and compared to this naive approach, we get of loading, we get 23 times improvement with only a 15% memory overhead. So, and I will go into more detail about how we do that now. Okay, so the graph representation that VT is based on is called compact sparse row, and this is the one that is used by PowerGraph and GraphX. So to show you a demonstration of what this means, because I want to go into why this is hard to extend, or why this is hard to modify, consider this graph on the right. It's quite simple. I've highlighted the vertex with ID number 1 and its edges over here. The representation in memory of this is down at the bottom. And you see I have so CSR exists of a pointer array, which is indexed by the vertex ID. So vertex 1 is at the offset 1 there. That points to a region of the neighbor array, which lists off the vertices that are its neighbors. So it points to 0 and 2. So the things to notice about this representation is that, so first, accessing the neighbor is pretty fast. So if you want to get that neighborhood, you just kind of look at the vertex ID, the source vertex ID, and that will point directly to a neighbor array, and you can just read them off. There's not a lot of pointer chasing or anything like that. The second thing to notice is that this is actually very compact. The length of that neighborhood isn't explicitly encoded. So the way that you know that there's two neighbors of number 1 is that if you look at vertex number 2 in the pointer array and where that points to, that will kind of implicitly demarcate the end of the neighbor array for number 1. And this is important because if you think about, big graphs with billions of vertices or something like this, keeping around metadata to know how many neighbors they have will start really influencing how much memory is needed to represent the graph. So now, considering how to change this graph, let's suppose that we're just adding one extra edge, which is that orange line in there. The resulting graph representation would have to change to something like this, where we have we've added an extra element into the neighbor array, and we've kind of had to move everything over and adjust a bunch of pointers. So you can see that this could be very expensive, especially depending on where in that array things had to be updated. So the basic idea that we take for Version Traveler for this part of the problem, the graph representation, is to add deltas to this compact sparse representation. So again, because we're making this assumption that we believe that most of the graph will be unchanging, or a large subgraph may be unchanging, we want to use the compact sparse representation to get the benefits, to get the compactness and to get the access efficiency, but then we want to find a way to add deltas for the parts that are changing. So now I have a more simplified version of a graph here. Let's say that this is version 1. I've introduced the concept of a delta cache. So basically what we're going to do is first take these elements in the pointer array and overload them a little bit and take out one bit of those pointers and use that as the what we call a delta indicator. Whether or not when trying to access the neighborhood for this vertex, whether you should go and look in the compact sparse representation, the normal neighbor array, or whether you should go to the delta cache. Let's say we have another version up here which has a different neighborhood. It has two elements in its neighborhood instead of just vertex zero. What we see is we basically keep that changed neighbor array up here in the delta cache. If we have two versions, we keep two different copies of that modified neighborhood. And what you see is that this pointer, which was the CSR pointer, is now being used as a offset into this vertex delta array that's in the delta cache. So there's a little bit more that we have to do. This again, when I was talking about how we maintain the compactness and we don't encode the lengths of these arrays, this means that the vertex right before, we need to know when that neighbor array ends, how many neighbors that one has. So we have to keep some metadata there. But this is just for those versions and those neighborhoods that are changed. There's also some other information that we need to keep in the delta entries here about how to efficiently switch between them. And there's more detail about that in the paper. So I'm not going to go into too much of a detail. But hopefully this gives you a little bit of a flavor about how we can use the compact sparse representation for most of the graph. And then for these parts that are changing for the different versions, we can represent their data, their changes in a way that we can compute on. The deltas are also, you know, you may have noticed when I gave that example, we had two of those changed neighborhoods that had almost exactly the same elements in it. So this doesn't seem like it is very memory efficient. So in fact, you can use a similar you can make a similar trade-off and decide to make that more compact if you want, right? So if you have a lot of versions in the system and they all have very similar similar neighborhoods that are changing, it may be better to share. So we have two approaches to do this, and I'm not going to go too much into detail about these. One of them is basically taking a log about how some shared neighborhood vector should be modified for a particular version's neighborhood. And that really introduces some overhead on switching time to kind of prepare the delta ready for processing. The other one is to represent the neighborhood as a chain of vectors rather than a direct array like this. And that one has a little bit more access overhead because you have a little bit of pointer chasing that's happening. But yeah, again, I don't really want to go into too much detail about the some of these trade-offs. Instead, I want to give you a little bit of a sample of some of the evaluation that Shaolin did here. So these experiments were all done on a single machine with 60 gigabytes of memory. We had a variety of workloads and algorithms that we ran. Most of the graphs that we started off with were static graphs. So we had a technique of generating deltas off of these static graphs in such a way to maintain these properties of locality. So we would take a particular part of the graph and start adding things or removing things. So the first thing I kind of want to show you is how the VT balances performance and compactness. So for this experiment, we used the Amazon 08 dataset with 10 deltas that were of size 0.1% of the graph. And we compared it against PowerGraph. So I don't know if I mentioned this. I might have forgotten. The implementation is also based on PowerGraph. So we're really comparing the same system with and without the VT extensions. So we take two kind of baselines for PowerGraph. The first one is that initial flow chart that I showed where it was loading every time, loading the graph representation every time. And so that's what's demarked by PowerGraph. The left-hand bars in this graph are on the time axis and the right-hand bars are on the memory axis. So because this is loading every time, we pay a lot of time waiting for the loading to happen. And then since we're throwing away the versions, we don't actually pay much memory. The other kind of naive baseline case is PowerGraph with cache, which is the second bar. And what we did here is we wanted to see we wanted to see what the performance would be like if we cached everything. So we're not doing deltas now, we're just caching everything. We don't have the concept of how to integrate the deltas. So in this one, as you would expect, we see what the kind of baseline for performance is. It performs much faster because it doesn't need to do these expensive loads. But of course, it uses a lot of memory. And then this line at the very right-hand side is VT, which has comparable performance to caching the whole version for all of these things, but much less memory, 15% of the memory used with the caching version. Only 15% more memory usage than the non-caching version. The evaluation, we also wanted to compare against some other multi-version type approaches. And to get kind of an accurate comparison, we tried to make a reference version of some different strategies. So the first strategy we have is log-based. So the basic idea here is that you have a log of things, of changes to the graph, and you want to apply that graph every time you switch versions. So unlike what I presented for VT, where the switch is very quick and you can process on this representation that contains essentially lots of versions, this one is kind of changing the graph based on the log, based on some logging techniques. The second reference implementation is bitmap based, where you have basically you can think of it as having neighborhoods that have all of the versions neighbors and bitmaps that say whether or not a particular version should include that particular node. And what you see in this graph, so it's, the thing that I want you to take away, I guess, is that there's some different advantages. VT has different advantages in both memory or time, and it's not always the same which one it does better at. And this is again about balancing this trade-off. So it really is a trade-off that needs to be balanced. So we have a utility metric which tries to capture what it means to be good at both, in the memory and the time sense. Finally, we wanted to run this on some realistic evolving graphs, as well as these ones where we were generating the data. So we have a few. We have two data sets: a Facebook data set and a GitHub data set, where we have 10 versions of these graphs. And you can think of the deltas encoding things like new friends or collaborators inside of this. Inside of these graphs. And again, we compare it against our reference implementations of these other approaches, and we see essentially the same types of things, where Version Traveler is able to kind of balance these trade-offs between memory and performance. There's a lot more evaluation in the paper. I just kind of wanted to give you a taste of it here. So to conclude, multi-version graph processing needs different systems than single-version graph processing. And we believe multi-version graph processing is interesting to look at graphs as they evolve over time. The primary trade-off that we kind of identified is between compactness and neighbor access efficiency, which is related to processing time, and also the ability to kind of easily switch between versions. I showed VT, which has a hybrid graph, and Delta, which balances these trade-offs. And I encourage you to check out the paper and contact Xiaowen, because he would probably be much better at describing everything than I am. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Dan, for the interesting talk. So I'm interested in your thoughts, how you would like to expand this work to, currently you already have connectivity, you don't have any edge weights, edge value at all. How do you think you would like to expand this to take that into account in the Delta version or even the baseline, your CSR currently already has connectivity?
So at the moment, yeah, we're just talking about the graph structure and how that would kind of change. If I understand correctly, you're talking about if there are certain parts of the data that you can keep around between these multi-version processing.
Yeah,
I think that's an interesting question. I think there is some work on it. I'm blanking on what the reference would be. Yeah, it's not it's not clear to me how what the best way to do that is, especially if you want to have kind of this arbitrary. So if you're going in one direction, like the forward, you know, in chronological time, keeping track of the data along with the graph structure changes seems a lot simpler. And when you start to do this, you know, you want to be able to switch to something that is not maybe kind of a chronological change. It seems like keeping track of that is hard. I don't know. I don't think I have a good answer to what the direction would be.
Thank you.
Namo from Virginia Tech. So next talk. So I have a clarification question. Based on your description, it seems that let's say I have multiple versions of the graphs. The original version can be represented as a graph, and then the second version can be represented as the graph plus some delta array. Mm-hmm. Well, how about the third one? The third one is like the original graph plus delta and plus another delta?
Yeah, so we have the concept that the deltas can be off of either the what we call the root, which is like you said, the root is what we call the base one. The deltas can be either off of another delta, or they can be off of the root itself. So the deltas, some of those extra fields that I had in the delta cache there that I didn't explain, some of those allow you to specify which version your delta is off of.
Okay, so if that is the case, so will it be very expensive? Let's say I want to get some version because you need to compose a lot of delta in order to get the follow-up version?
No, well, so depending on how the deltas are represented, they may reproduce some of the extra, they may copy some of the changes, right? So things like the okay, so because this goes into the part that I didn't really describe. So if you're using like one of the sharing or the chaining type approaches, then yes, sometimes the processing and the figuring out what the delta should look like is more expensive. So that can either be at runtime while you're trying to access the neighbors, or it can be at the switch. You do some kind of bookkeeping, and that changes things. I guess the other thing that I want to say, though, is that I just forgot what I was going to tell you.
Okay, that's fine.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Hassan Eslami, you are UC on Facebook. Very good work. I have a question regarding the baseline and a clarification on top of that.
Yeah.
So the baseline was basically loading a version of the graph, doing a computation.
Yeah.
Again, loading another version of the graph,
yeah,
doing the computation. I wouldn't be surprised to see 23 times speed,
yeah,
up,
sure,
just because, you know, you're removing the
load.
But there is this notion of vertex mutations and edge mutations, which many graph processing systems has. And I believe PowerGraph in the synchronous version, they have it. And mutations usually are treated as messages.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering how would be the performance of processing on multiple versions of a graph by just having mutations? So you,
yeah,
don't do any changes in the code. You don't have this version traveler's approach. But
yeah,
you basically hack through vertex mutations and edge mutations and implement the same thing. So what would be the performance comparison from version traveler and the mutation approach?
Right. So I think certain things are pretty easy to do with the mutation approach, like adding a new vertex and a new edge or something like that. I don't know about a new edge. Adding a new vertex is pretty easy, I think. When you start removing things and adding them and having more arbitrary messages, I think it gets a little bit harder. In terms of the representation, there may be so to be able to load it again. So there is that problem where if you're using a representation which does not allow these mutations. So if the mutations are kind of happening before, then you still have to kind of throw away that representation and reconstruct it somehow.
Sure, but that only happens in a synchronous version. So if you have a synchronous version, you always can apply mutations at the end of a superstep and then wait for the mutations to be applied at the beginning of the next superstep, which is the same thing that, for instance, Apache Giraffe implements or PowerGraph in synchronous version implements. So in that case, again, mutations can be applied.
Okay. Yeah. I think that in the Apache Giraffe case, part of the reason that those are easy to apply is because you have like a vector of vectors representation, which is easier to append.
You can always have, for instance, a bi-array serialized version of edges in Apache Giraffe, and that's not easy to append.
So maybe we could take this offline. Okay, it sounds like a good offline discussion.
Thank you.
So one last question.
Yeah, Ray Lucchese, Silverton Consulting. It wasn't clear to me how you represented the dropping of an edge in your structure, or was that one of the fields that wasn't discussed? Or?
Yeah, so dropping of an edge would be, so in the delta, so we have the compact sparse representation, which would have the neighbor array. If you wanted to drop an edge in a version, that pointer would now start to point to an entry in the delta cache, which would have the whole neighborhood, which would be missing whatever you would leave out, whatever you didn't want in there.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so let's thank Dan again.
Thank you.